Blog Talk Radio.
And we are live with another episode of This Week in Health Innovation. Welcome, everyone. I'm Greg Masters, your producer and co-host of the show. And this show is brought to you by healthinnovationmedia.com. And joining me, as always, in the virtual booth is my partner, Dr. Pat Salver. Pat, are you still with us?
I am indeed, and I'm really excited about today's show and having a chance to talk to Daniel Kraft.
Absolutely. So you and me both. And we're going to just tell you a little bit about Daniel before I kick it over to Pat. Daniel is a Stanford and Harvard-trained physician with over 20 years of experience in clinical practice, biomedical research, and healthcare innovation, following undergraduate degrees at Brown University and medical school at Stanford. Dr. Kraft, board-certified in Harvard Combined Internal Medicine and Pediatrics Residency Program at the Mass General and Boston Children's. He went on to complete Stanford fellowships in hematology, oncology, and bone marrow transplantation, as well as conduct extensive research in stem cell biology and regenerative medicine through faculty positions with Stanford University of Medicine and as clinical faculty for the Pediatric Bone Marrow Transplantation Service at UCSF. Daniel has multiple scientific publications, including Nature and Science, and numerous patents in the space of medical devices, immunology, and stem cells. Daniel is the faculty chair for the medicine track at Singularity University and is the executive director for FutureMed, an annual program which explores convergent, exponentially developing technologies and their potential in biomedicine and healthcare. He's the inventor of NeuroMiner, a minimally invasive device for the harvest of bone marrow stem cells, which has achieved FDA approval, and founded RegenMed Systems to commercialize this technology. And I believe he's also founder of IntelliMedicine. So with that as a overview of an impressive individual, Pat, over to you.
Well, that is pretty amazing. And I, as I'm listening to that bio, Daniel, I'm trying to figure out where to start. But I think perhaps you can talk to us a little bit about how your path from internal medicine and pediatrics through hem-onc and then ultimately bone marrow transplant and becoming an inventor and all the things that you've done, how do they converge to put you in the place that you are today? So tell us a little bit about your pathway, and then we'll dive into convergence, exponentiality, and FutureMed.
Well, thanks. First of all, it's great to be with you both and on the show. And I would say in terms of paths in medicine, it was a real challenge for me when I was a medical student at Stanford, you know, to even choose a residency, because I sort of loved all my rotations, and medicine is such a rich field. And as you know, when you start to specialize, you sort of get somewhat siloed. And my path is one that I think I've been lucky to sort of mix it up with different arenas. I've been involved in aerospace medicine with NASA and have served as a flight surgeon in the Guard, and I've gotten involved in healthcare IT through just sort of meeting unmet needs, you know, even in the hospital setting, and in the medical device world through Stanford Biodesign and beyond. So my path is somewhat one where I've been open to cross-fertilizing with different fields and seeing the opportunity to take lessons from other arenas, even the world of aviation, for example, now using things like checklists and the heads-up displays, which are coming to our Google Glass and beyond. So I can't quite have predicted my path, but I think part of the excitement about the future of health and medicine is redefining medicine, not just by old traditional paths and specialties, but by how we can take new ideas and technologies and put them together in new ways to reinvent, improve how we do things.
So that's a perfect segue into talking about FutureMed. I was lucky enough to attend FutureMed, I think, 2 years ago now. And it was, as I look back over all the meetings and conferences and educational events that I've attended, this was the singular most exciting week that I have ever spent. And you pretty much exhausted us because it went from 8 in the morning until 10 at night, but one after another, very exciting innovation. So tell the audience, Avi, what is Singularity University? What is FutureMed? What are you trying to accomplish? And don't forget to tell people how they can join as well.
Sure. Well, I've been really fortunate to be, I think, the first faculty signed up to join Singularity University, which is a five-year-old program based at NASA Ames in the heart of Silicon Valley. The website is singularityu.org. And each year, especially in the summer, we bring together 80 amazing folks from across the planet, 35 countries this year, to kind of get out of their normal buckets. So I chair the medicine track. There's closely aligned tracks in biotechnology, robotics, artificial intelligence, digital manufacturing, energy, policy, law, and ethics, and others. And what happens is in our 10-week programs and our one-week executive programs, we help today and future leaders understand what's the power of exponential-type technologies. You know, having the iPhone 5S coming out, but what will the iPhone 8 be able to do? What's the track and trajectory of artificial intelligence, like the power of IBM Watson? Where are we moving with exponentially dropping costs in genomics and the implications for that? And the idea is to both educate and inspire and enable leaders to understand these technologies and then leverage them to address big global challenges, for example, poverty, education, global health. One team and company has spun out called Matternet using low-cost drones, UAVs, to deliver drugs and vaccines in hard-to-reach places, whether that's in Africa or Haiti or beyond. And that's an example of seeing where technology go with drones that could be used in healthcare. And we've had one-week programs, executive programs, for folks who don't have 10 weeks to learn about these technologies. And there's so much interest in healthcare. It touches everybody personally or professionally. And there's such a resurgence of folks wanting to apply their skills, whether that's in gaming or statistics or apps or engineering, to apply to healthcare. So FutureMed was born out of this recognition that medicine was changing. There are new tools and individuals and powerful technologies coming to bear, but many folks don't see where they're heading and what their convergence would be. So Peter Diamandis and I, Peter's a co-founder of Singularity University, along with Ray Kurzweil, who's an adventure futurist and now director of engineering at Google. We put together FutureMed, and it was an experiment to see what happens when, as opposed to meetings that I might often go to, a hematology meeting or a cardiologist to a cardiologist meeting, what happens when we bring clinicians together from different fields, as well as folks from devices, IT, investment, gaming, and inspire them with what's the cutting edge and let folks see where the clock is going in 2 to 5 years so that we can pull new things together. And so FutureMed was born out of that. We've done 3 of them at NASA. You can see a lot of the takeaways and synthesis videos at our website, futuremed2020.com. And so, for example, we can look at the future of healthcare and IT and have folks like the head of IBM Watson's medical group paired with Vinod Khosla, the famed investor and entrepreneur who's now investing in healthcare and often likes to suggest that 80% of doctors can be replaced. We can have folks at the leading edge of genomics and out of Stanford, like Atul Butte. We can have new innovations demonstrated, like at our last FutureMed, we had some of the first public displays of Google Glass, which has inspired several of our participants to be the first to take them into the operating room and utilize the glass technology in new ways. So part of the magic of Singularity University and FutureMed is this mix that happens when you bring forward-thinking folks together, let them get out of their silos and start thinking about where the convergence is happening and to make that happen. So briefly, several new companies have come out of Singularity and FutureMed. One well-known one is Scanadu, which is one of the leading teams competing in the XPRIZE to make a medical tricorder. They sort of were born at the first FutureMed in 2011, have since gone on to build functional prototypes, sell more, I think, a record of crowdsource funding on Indiegogo, and are going to be launching next year basically a medical tricorder-type device. And that came from them mixing it up with folks from the design world, the technology world, and beyond. So we like to both educate, inspire, and enable the future of healthcare, and that's what FutureMed and Singularity is about. And folks who are interested, we're growing FutureMed this November 3rd through 6th at the Hotel Del Coronado in San Diego. We'll be doing a larger version that's shorter, 3.5 days. We'd love forward-thinking folks to attend. So and can apply it at the futuremed2020.com website.
Yeah, and for anybody who's listening, I strongly recommend if you can squeeze this into your schedule to do it, because it is a life-altering event. I was in, I think it was the second class, Daniel, and my company, Health Tech Hatch, in part developed in the way that it did because of relationships that I ended up establishing at FutureMed. And to me, when I look back on that experience, I mean, I think you had 80 or 90 amazing innovators who came through one after another and talked about the kinds of cutting edge technology that they were developing or applying. And just when I was sitting in the front row next to somebody and we kept saying, no, nothing can top that. And then the next speaker would come out and it would be even better than the prior speaker, which was incredible. But in addition to that, you kind of select the people who attend. So you have a nice mix ranging from, there were medical students, including some students that were from out of the country, all the way up to mid and really late career folks who are doing a whole variety of things. So it's this mix of wonderful innovators who, by the way, hung around to talk to us, who are the attendees, and then this interesting mix of attendees that just I know this sounds like a cliche, but it was actually magical. You know what I'd like to explore? One of the first times that I met you, you were giving one of those talks where you introduce people to all sorts of amazing, cool technologies that are going to shape healthcare. I wonder if you could tell us what are the top one or two technologies that you think over the next 12 months will really make a difference in healthcare.
Sure. Well, I think part of the key thing is it's no one technology, and it's technologies that are sort of blurring lines. So I think one area that's clearly moving quickly is this idea of connected and digital health, the fact that the new drug is really the empowered and connected patient, and that the old mental models of, you know, your doctor's in charge of your health and you get to see them once a year maybe or call them up after you have a problem is changing. The fact that now a diabetic can have a glucometer that's either, you know, that's attached to or connected to their phone, and they can get a dashboard and feedback loops on their blood glucose levels and enable their clinical team to then improve that, give them both insight and empowerment to stay on top of their diabetes regimen, which can have huge implications. We're seeing the ability now, if you walk into an Apple store, you can now find incredibly like 25 to 30 connected health type devices on the shelf there, everything from the counting pedometers like the Fitbit and the Nike Fuel now to, you know, connected scales, blood pressure cuffs, glucometers, baby monitors. And so I think that's a convergence of technologies that are getting smaller, cheaper, and better. And obviously our phones are becoming digital health platforms in many, many ways. From examples like our FutureMed faculty, Dave Albert, who's developed the AliveCor EKG device, to glucometers, to the ability to use the camera in smart ways to do diagnostics. And these are not just tools for consumers, they're becoming tools for the clinicians. There's the concept of the sort of digital health toolkit, where medicine used to happen in the hospital and the clinic is now increasingly able to happen in our home with a digital checkup anywhere enabled by low-cost sensors. So, for example, Nokia is involved with an XPRIZE challenge to develop new sensors. They'll be announcing the winners of that next week. And that layers in, for example, with the Tricorder XPRIZE, which I mentioned, with companies like Scanadu. And it's where those things come together, and hopefully when they get aligned with the payers, the physicians, the different patient groups, it's not enough to have the technologies. Some of them are great in gee whiz, but someone still has to pay for it. And, of course, in some cases, they're still regulated, which is often important. And the FDA, to their credit, is starting to now pay attention to fast-moving technologies because they can't work the way they used to. The world's moving too quickly. How do we regulate apps? There's an app that counts your steps different than the one that suggests how much insulin to take. So there's a lot of layers to this. So that's one area that's connected to health. Another part that's layering into that in the next year already is this idea of big data. It's a buzzword, but big data is now connecting to sort of big analytics and you've got companies all the way from Palantir to IBM Watson to companies like Medgar and others starting to leverage the big data to make that useful at the point of care. So as clinicians today, and both of you and I trained in traditional medicine, we might read journals 3 or 4 hours a week or month if we're lucky. There's no way to keep up with the avalanche of papers or the information about an individual patient, which now, you know, you can have your genome scan for $99. I can have your wearable device data. I can have your social network information. How do we integrate that? And I think leveraging smart sort of I don't like to call it artificial intelligence or AI. I like to call it IA, intelligence augmentation, because I think those are going to increasingly empower us as patients, as physicians, as healthcare systems to take this new Internet of Things and this new information and make it truly useful. And briefly, my favorite example of, you know, this privacy concerns and beyond, but when you drive now, most of us are beholden to our Google Maps or our Waze or our Apple Maps sometimes. And, you know, we give up a little privacy when we sign up with Google or whomever to show where we are driving and what our speeds are. And from that, we end up having a map and showing where the traffic is and suggested better routes to get to work or school or avoid traffic jams. And it's not only the big data, but it's the participatory connected data that's going to be playing more of an example. And just like driving apps with traffic are an example of that, I think the future of healthcare is going to be connecting our data in new ways and unsiloing it and unleashing some of that crowdsourced power to improve our individual paths and trajectories, but also that of the entire healthcare system.
Well, you raised a lot of interesting issues, but I think what I want to start with here is my son's a radiologist in Boise, and I spent the holiday with him. And we had a conversation about what is going to be the role of physicians in this brave new world of patient empowerment, not just that they're empowered to take charge and be much more active in engaging their doctors, but they're going to have all the information that they used to have to get from me. And then with this big data and the analytics and companies like Medgar, he said to me, so what am I going to do going forward? You know, where am I going to fit into this equation? And what will I be doing as a physician, you know, 5 or 10 years from now?
Well, that's a great point. That leads to the point that disruption is happening. And some fields, including fields like radiology, are set to be disrupted and changed more rapidly than others. Now, not to pick on radiologists or dermatologists per se, but what they do is a lot of pattern recognition. They look at a rash or a mole, and they've seen thousands of them. They train clinically. They have a mindset of knowing what looks right or wrong. And that's essentially what pattern recognition machine learning engines can do today. And you can already download apps that will scan your mole and at least suggest whether it's dangerous or not. There's now AI engines being into the radiology suite to do the initial scans on chest x-rays or CT scans. And it's already been happening in pathology to do screenings of mammograms and pap smears. So the question of what your son, the radiologist, will be doing in a few years might be quite a bit different. Maybe we'll need fewer of them, and the scans and the x-rays that are showing particular problems, a nodule, whatever, are going to be pushed to them. So they're not spending 90% of the time seeing the normal scans that are getting pushed, the more high-level ones that take another level of distinction and analytics and connection. And some fields will be impacted. Dermatology, like I mentioned, there's a lot of now e-derm-type packages. Kaiser's pioneered that many of their visits, you don't need to wait to see the dermatologist. Your primary care doctor in the Kaiser Clinic can take a picture or connect directly to a dermatologist using a dermatoscope or even their smartphone to share that image and have an immediate answer as to whether that a rash or mole might look dangerous and need a biopsy. So to that point, I think any field, whether you're in healthcare or beyond, you need to look to where technology is heading, how that might disrupt you. You don't want to be the next Kodak, which, by the way, invented digital photography and then has a market cap a tenth that of Instagram today. You don't want to be the next RIM or BlackBerry. It beholds to take a look with pretty clear eyes about where technology is going and how you might then leverage that. The dermatologists and the radiologists of the future are going to be the ones that embrace this and leverage it in smart ways. And it'll be painful for some, but hopefully in the end it's going to give us better care at lower costs.
Well, I'm completely with you. All, this revolution is happening at a time when a lot of people have concerns about whether we have enough doctors in this country. And I think what I took from what you just said is that we probably do have enough doctors. As a matter of fact, we may ultimately have too many doctors because they're not going to be doing some of the same things that they were doing in the past. And in fact, those things will be done via technology. And so I don't know if you, well, you are at Stanford, so you are involved in health education or medical education. And the question that I have are the academic settings tracking and keeping up with all the stuff that's happening so that they will be training a generation of not just doctors but other healthcare providers who are going to be prepared to be successful in this brave new world?
Well, sure. I think it's very important to look at the future and the current state of medical education. At Stanford, every medical student now gets an iPad their very first day of school loaded up with a curriculum. So instead of hauling around 100 pounds of books, you have incredible opportunity to, for example, take anatomy. You know, you can now do, you know, virtual autopsies and clinical exams with some incredible tools. There's the Stanford Anatomy Lab has a huge dissection table that's essentially a huge iPad. There's an incredible simulation center at Stanford now where the model is changing as we trained in C1, Do One, Teach One to C1 and Sim1 and Sim It and Sim It until you get it right. And it's not just the individual skill that's being examined, how to put in a line. It's the whole team network. And I mentioned that I've been a pilot and a flight surgeon since college and a flight surgeon since residency. There's lessons from aviation. One of those is checklists, but another one is the world of simulation. Flying has gotten much safer because the pilots can practice every emergency that might happen once in a blue moon. And similarly in healthcare, we're educating now using technology, like very fancy mannequins, but all the way down to simple apps. You can practice advanced care life, ACLS and how to do CPR and learn that through simulations on your smartphone. It can go the whole spectrum of a whole team in an OR or an emergency room being stressed to fail, all the way to simulating how do you tell a family that the loved one has died and learning and improving upon that. So education, as you know, is being disrupted through flipped classrooms and massive online courses, but I think healthcare education is going to need to change. The doctors of the future don't need to spend all the time memorizing because that's all accessible, through their smart tablets, but we'll need to be better at integrating all this and guiding and sifting all this. And in some cases, we do have, as you mentioned, in some cases, a shortage of primary care physicians, in some cases, an overabundance of specialists in certain areas. These tools and technologies and better education will take a nurse practitioner in rural rural North Dakota, where there's not enough clinicians, enable a nurse practitioner to have the power and the education and the leverage of seasoned, primary care doctors or internists and be able to access their knowledge base much more quickly. So we'll be leveraging, just like in the OR, and general anesthesia is often done by a nurse anesthetist, supervised by an MD anesthesiologist. There'll be the equivalent of that in healthcare. And the education piece is going to be an important part of that.
Yeah, I just hope the AAMC is keeping up. I had the opportunity to spend the weekend at a design-a-thon, and one of the people on my team is a first-year a psychiatry resident, and we were talking about training because, of course, I know what my training was like years ago, but I was curious about, current training, and there still is, I think, way too much emphasis on memorizing and regurgitating things that you don't have to memorize and regurgitate because it's going to be, as you said, right in front of your face on your Google Glasses. All that angst that I used to have about running codes and, resuscitating people from full arrests and so forth is all going to go away because the right drug is going to pop up right in front of me, the suggestion of what I should do. And I'm sure at Stanford, you guys are probably cutting edge because a lot of what's going on in this digital health space is, Stanford is kind of ground zero for it. I worry about people who are going through training programs who maybe aren't as fortunate to have all this cutting edge stuff, easily accessible to them in terms of, knowing what's going on and staying up and having, a faculty member who's also running FutureMed.
Well, I think that there's going to be the democratization of education across the planet. So now a you know, a kid in rural Africa with a smartphone has as much access to information as the President of the United States did 15 or 20 years ago. And similarly, hopefully, you know, in a remote medical school or elsewhere, now you can access almost any of this medical information and use tools to connect back to other specialists. So this world of the digital checkup and medical type tricorder is being layered with new point of care diagnostics. So you can, in some cases, use your smartphone to augment your analysis and other types of simple primary care procedures. And the education component and the ability to tie a clinic in rural Nepal to Stanford, UCSF, is more and more easier. It can change the equation, and may change the equation of, you know, where is the center for medical education? I think with more and more minds coming online and being connected, that may shift and give us new ways to think about how we both educate and practice healthcare.
Well, we're getting towards the end of our time together, Daniel, and I want to take a left turn, if it's okay with you, and kind of go back to FutureMed. And what I want to ask you about is patients and engagement of patients. You talked about it at the very beginning, but one of the things when you talk about all the people that get that are brought together and have an opportunity to practice conversion at FutureMed, the one group that is absent is really the patient. Although we're all patients, there are this group of people who are, in quotes, real patients, because they're actually living with chronic illness and, you know, having to access the healthcare system. Do you see a day when perhaps you add to the mix of the FutureMed either presenters or audience a group of patients?
No, absolutely. Actually, the last two FutureMeds, including the upcoming FutureMed, we have a whole section on the engaged and empowered patient, to particularly highlight both patients who've taken technology into their own hands. For example, Sean Ahrens with Chronology has built a whole platform for Crohn's patients to not only share their meds and their stories, but also to crowdsource clinical trials. They discovered that drinking beer is really bad for Crohn's patients, for example, and it's not a clinical trial that would have been funded or done otherwise. There's examples of the e-patient movement, like Dave Bronkart, who's been at FutureMed, to folks who are building platforms to engage patients in new ways. The power now, you know, used to be the first doctor you go to now is Dr. Google. and we physicians sometimes resent the fact that someone comes in with a stack of printouts that we can't get through in a 15-minute visit. But technology and connection and big data is really changing the equation. And an important part that we do focus on now is how the patient's getting engaged not only in taking control of their health, but also contributing to the future and the present state of medicine, participatory healthcare, and new startups that have come out of groups like Rock Health, a healthcare incubator in San Francisco, for example, now taking pre-diabetics, putting together social networks, sending them connected health scales, and enabling them to turn the corner on not moving into diabetes. That's where medicine's probably going to happen. I like to mention that, you know, today we don't practice healthcare, we practice sick care. The incentives are now to take patients when they have diabetes or need a stent or a biopsy or a transplant. That's where the dollars are flowing. The shift in healthcare with ACOs and beyond accountable care and value-based care is to shifting the opportunity to doing things that prevent disease in the first place or ameliorate it when it's happening. And the patient is a key part of that, and incentivizing them in smart ways, whether that's lowering their premium because they're wearing a Fitbit or other device and showing that they're actually exercising or checking into the gym as opposed to McDonald's, will be part of that whole future of healthcare. And it's already here today in many ways.
Well, I want to thank you, Daniel. It was a wild ride that you just took us on. And I'd like to tell all our listeners that if you get a chance, be sure you attend FutureMed coming soon to San Diego. And I'll turn it over to Greg.
Well, thanks, Pat. Excellent interview. Lots of comments on Twitter. So, Daniel, follow Daniel at Daniel_Kraft, K-R-A-F-T, and do check out the FutureMed2020.com. They're hosted at the absolutely exquisitely beautiful Hotel Del Coronado. And if you would like a view of the San Diego Bay looking out to Point Loma, check out the cam that I just tweeted under @2HealthGuru. So there you have it, Daniel Kraft. Thanks for joining us. We do this next week, and we'll be chatting with Lisa Suenan of Silos. This is Greg Masters from Pat Solver saying bye now.